Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, whereas we have been thanking the Lord for answered prayer in the election on Tuesday, frankly, not everyone is happy that Donald Trump is now president-elect Donald Trump. And as a matter of fact, there are many who are doing their best right now as we speak to destabilize America and to infiltrate the new Trump administration with Marxists and jihadists and watered-down Republican establishment types whose intents are not pure, but rather to hijack all promised reforms to make the federal government once again responsive to the people. And we're going to talk about those dangers in these next weeks, in particular between the historic election of Trump and Pence on Tuesday and the inauguration day in January, and why these are the most dangerous days, and we need to be alert of that. In segment four today, we're going to get key insight into what is happening and what's involved in these citywide riots and what I call them rent-a-mobs that we're seeing all across the country, who's behind them, and what their goal is. That'll be a very, very critical discussion in section four. And to help me in this matter today, I'm going to be joined by John Guandalo, former FBI agent, founder of UnderstandingTheThreat.com, and author of Raising a Jihadi Generation, and Chris Gobetz, who posed as a Muslim convert and intern for the Hamas organization, Council on American and Islamic Relations, and whose story is found in the book Muslim Mafia. Gentlemen, welcome today to Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, thanks for having us, Sam. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
John and Chris, we are glad that you are with us, and we have a very heavy topic today. It's extraordinarily serious, and I hate to have to move with our listeners across the country from days of rejoicing to now a serious subject, such we're going to talk about today, but we have to do that because the enemies of freedom are more active than ever. You gentlemen are dealing in an arena. You have dealt in an arena. Both of you have been on this program before and have provided tremendous information, and so that's why you're here today. Now, personally, having served in the Pennsylvania legislature for over 18 years and seeing how new gubernatorial administrations sweep new people into power, I also know that unless someone is carefully watching, that the wolves tend to come in with the sheep and the termites tend to come in with the lumber. And that is a problem. And that's often not a matter of just inefficiency or unprofessionalism at stake. But when you're talking about the U.S. federal government that the whole world is watching, I believe that national security is at stake. And I'm going to go now to an article, John, that I believe that you wrote or someone from your organization wrote, just published on your website, UnderstandingTheThreat.com, entitled All Hands on Deck. And I'm going to read just the first few lines of this article to get us going in this first section today. Quote, you write this, from a national security perspective, this is not the time to find common ground with those who oppose liberty and our constitutional republic, end quote. So, John, let me go to you first on this. You say here, quote, from a national security perspective, end quote. I'm going to ask you this direct question. In your estimation, if you were to rate our level of national security right now on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being flashing red active alert, compromised circumstances, to one being most secure, sound, with no active alert, where would we be in this nation right now? You're saying 10, that active alert, that we are at the top of the square, meaning national security is compromised, flashing red, national security is an issue. That's what you're saying. I'll make that clear for our listeners.
Yes, that's very clear.
That ought to wake up everybody who's listening. Now, we know that there have been a lot of things that have happened. We know that Hillary Clinton has released a lot of information. We know a lot of things have taken place. But I want to go to you next in this next question and say this. Do you have reason to believe that Donald Trump and his team, transition team, understands the seriousness of this time? Or are we already at risk of integrating the enemies of freedom into this new administration?
I'm afraid to say it's the latter. There are good men inside Mr. Trump's camp, no doubt, and they have an understanding of the nature of this threat. But no, there is a significant lack of understanding, because right now, coming at the Trump camp, you see, they think there's two sides in this war. They think there's the Marxist socialists, which we'll call the Democrat Party, because that's what they have become. You know, the days of John Kennedy and Scoop Jackson have long passed. This is the Socialist Party of the United States, which puts them in the enemy camp. And then there's the Republicans. That's how the people around Mr. Trump view that. That is wrong. There are three camps, and the camp that is the most dangerous, in my estimation, are the people who wear a Republican moniker, but they stand with the socialists, and they stand with, for whatever reason, they might ideologically believe in the constitutional republic and believe in liberty, and they'll tell you that, but their actions demonstrate that either from a personality defect, that they are not able to withstand personal criticism, or they're just corrupt, like Senator Bob Corker. They're not defenders of liberty. And the fact that he's being considered for Secretary of State, and guys like Mike Rogers and Mike McCall of Texas, who's the funder and defender of the Combating Violent Extremism program inside our government, which is the Muslim Brotherhood's core program to infiltrate the government, and McCall's the guy riding that horse into town and defending it. These are not people. Chris Christie, the guy who defends openly jihadis and attacks people like us and anyone else in the country that speaks truth about the Islamic threat.
John, let me interject and come to you right now. We got about a minute left in this section. Let's take what you're saying and go back into the matter that you said, national security as a flashing red 10, meaning all hands on deck. Alert, alert, alert. What is it about the national security right now that makes it flash red?
You've got several things. Putting China and Russia and North Korea on the sideline for a minute. The global Marxist movement, which is culminating right now in the streets of America, calling for people to be killed. And you've got the Islamic movement culminating right now, calling for the overthrow of the U.S. government and a revolution like they had in the Middle East. That's what I'm talking about. And most Americans do not understand that we are in a real war with real players, but it's not a war that we're going to win on a battlefield. The battlefield is going to become the United States, and there are policies and laws that can be brought to bear right now, but it has to be done right now.
And I would believe, John, that you're probably, what you're saying, the Republican establishment or the establishment sensitive people are also part of that problem, because they're either not aware of it or they're complicit. I'm going to let you come back and answer that in the second segment. But ladies and gentlemen, you're listening now today to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Sam Rohr. My special guests are John Guandalo and Chris Gobetz of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. When we come back, we're going to pick up and look at this whole area of why it's critical important to keep out watered-down Republicans, Marxists, and jihadists out of the Trump administration. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Securities and advisory services offered through Genius Wealth Management, member FINRA and SIPC.
Today, people are living longer than their forebears. Right now, more than 1 million Americans are alive past age 100. That means you need to work toward having financial resources that can give you independence into your golden years. But weighing different investment options may make you feel overwhelmed. You need someone, a trusted friend, who can come alongside and help you keep the complex simple. That's where the Life Financial Group comes in. For nearly 40 years, the Life Financial Group has helped thousands of families, not only here in Pennsylvania, but nationwide, become even better financial stewards of God's blessings. Managing your investments may feel challenging, but by using a complete financial stewardship approach, you too can gain confidence and peace of mind that your wealth is protected and that you maintain your financial independence. With morally clean investment options, we can help you reach your goals while honoring your convictions. Call us at the Life Financial Group today at 610-385-4500 or online at thelifegroup.org. That's thelifegroup.org.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
At the 11th hour of the 11th day, on the 11th month in the year 1918, World War I ended. Celebrated as Armistice Day, it was changed to Veterans Day after World War II. In 1921, President Warren Harding had the remains of an unknown soldier killed in France buried in Arlington Cemetery. He requested that all citizens indulge in a period of silent thanks to God for these valorous lives and of supplication for His divine mercy on our beloved country. Inscribed on the tomb are the words, "Here lies in honored glory an American soldier known but to God."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Please join us for the free Veterans Expo and Job Fair, November 15th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Spooky Nook Sports, Mannheim. The Veterans Expo connects active and retired military members and their families with benefits and resources. The Job Fair allows veterans and employers to discuss available positions. For more information, visit veteransexpo.com. More than 100 exhibitors and sponsors include Blue Ridge Communications, Disabled American Veterans, Fulton Financial Corporation, LCTV, Pennsylvania American Legion, Pennsylvania National Guard Outreach Office, Pennsylvania State Headquarters VFW, PHEAA, Triangle Refrigeration, HVAC, Plumbing, and Energy Management, the Sigma Network, WHTM ABC 27, Worley and Obitz Incorporated, and WFYL. For more information, visit veteransexpo.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, welcome back to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr and special guest today, John Guandolo, who is president of UnderstandingTheThreat.com and author of the book, Raising a Jihadi Generation. And Chris Gobbets, who is vice president for UnderstandingThreat.com, and he worked as an intern inside the Hamas organization called American Islamic Relations. And he is the writer, and his story is in a book called Muslim Mafia. Both of those can be found on the website of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Gentlemen, let's go back into where we left off there earlier. John, you mentioned some names earlier that were a part of, as indication that national security is already threatened. You mentioned the fact that, in your opinion, national security, security of the American public, is at a flashing red 10. So that raises up the significance of our discussion. Let me start here as we go through into this segment. During the campaign, clearly the opponents of Donald Trump evidenced themselves in the form of jihadi Muslims, globalism, the establishment, you name some of those, and they really seemed to operate almost as a cabal trying to derail the Trump campaign. But they did not win in that piece of the overall war. I believe, though, they're still probably going at it in an aggressive fashion. Let's start here and go back to the within the article that you wrote, All Hands on Deck. In there, you stated, quote, "The Trump team must keep out the watered-down Republicans, the Marxists, and the jihadis. I'm going to ask you this question. Why did you use these specific terms? And who are these people? And I want to ask, throw this into it as well. Are these people in the threat of their finding their way as termites into the structure of the new Trump administration? Are they department-level people, managers? Are they mid-level staffers? Or are they all the way at the top? Just kind of frame this for us, because a lot of people don't understand how a new presidential administration is actually put together.
Well, excuse me. It comes in all different forms. You know, the jihadi penetration of the United States comes in the form of those sympathetic to the Islamic movement working in HR departments inside some of the biggest defense contractors in the United States, working as staffers on Capitol Hill, and folks working in places across the United States where influence can be made at the local and state level. And that's something that we've explained in detail. So you've got that going on. But the more critical component right now is as Mr. Trump begins to create in his transition team recommendations for people to be leaders, the very people that are in there are problematic. And they include people who are sympathetic to the Islamic movement, people who are have already made decisions when they were, in the case of Mr. Christie, Governor Christie, as a governor, Senator Corker, as a senator, have shown their public support for jihadis, like the nation state of Iran. This is, to say it's unacceptable is not as strong a language. I mean, these people should be punted right out of Mr. Trump's camp. And the fact that they're even being entertained should be evidence to you and your listeners that there are people inside the Trump camp that are free of any clue of the war in which we're engaged. That's what I'm talking about. And I have no doubt that he will handle things like protests, like we're seeing today, very differently. And he will let local and state law enforcement do the things that they need to do to put their boot on the neck of these, literally or figuratively, of these protesters who are calling for killing for people. I just want to remind people, when Mr. Obama, who's clearly a socialist and Marxist, more a Marxist if I want to be very correct, was elected, you didn't see Republicans protesting. You didn't see them burning and looting. By the way, what does destroying storefronts and setting things on fire do for the cause? It doesn't, because the Marxists are not interested with doing what they say they're doing. They're interested with bringing the system down. And Americans need to understand, these are not just punks in the street. This is an organized, paid-for movement by hostile forces against the United States government. They need to be handled that way.
Absolutely, John. And I'm going to cover more of that with Chris in the fourth segment. But I just want to tell people right up front, you're hearing some things coming out of this White House yet that are saying that, well, these folks are just practicing their First Amendment rights. Let me tell you up front, there is no such thing as a First Amendment right that gives people the right to kill people, to destroy property, to burn American flags, and to intimidate or harm police officers. That's anarchy. And so, John, I just want to back that up, and I want to get on that right now, but I'm glad that you brought that up. Chris, let me go to you right now and say, in the interest of those who would seek to infiltrate a new administration, are there some departments that are more targeted, and John mentioned it, but just build on that just a little bit, that we need to be concerned about, and that, just mention that, please. Which places are these termites wanting to go?
Well, they're some of the main organizations are going to be the State Department as far as waging this war that against the jihadists. They're going to want to be involved in that. They're also, the Department of Homeland Security is a huge target for them, particularly John mentioned earlier, the Countering Violent Extremism program. That has been their baby program. Why? Because it keeps us on our heels. It keeps the national security apparatus on its heels in waging this war. And it keeps law enforcement worried about offending the jihadists, the suit-wearing jihadists, as we call them, while they try to investigate and dismantle the jihadi network. And that's why we've seen such a failure at the national level on dismantling the jihadi network, because we have failed programs like the Countering Violent Extremism program.
John, that's why you are saying that there can be no compromise in this circumstance, because if these things are not, if these termites are not rooted out, they will only live to work against this administration, I'm sure. Now, let's go on to this next subject here, because I want you to be as clear and name names to the extent that you can. There obviously is a short list out there right now from the standpoint of those individuals that are being considered for major positions, such as Secretary of State, Newt Gingrich perhaps, or others. There's General Flynn, maybe Department of Defense. There are Jeff Sessions that's out there perhaps as heading up Homeland Security. If you could walk down through there to give us an idea of those that perhaps names are already out there that are either red flags or a green light check yes, you know, but give us an indication of where things are right now, if you could.
Well, I think I named the guys very clearly in the article. The only one that wasn't in the article, Mike Rogers, would be another, I'd say, a red flag. You know, Corker and McCall and Chris Christie, they need to be out. They should never hold any leadership position. They've made their stances known very well. I think that Mr. Sessions, Senator Sessions as the Attorney General, would be an excellent call. I don't know that he's suited for DHS, but I think he's an incredibly competent man and would be a good fit in many places. But I think Attorney General would be a strong consideration for him. And I think General Flynn as Secretary of Defense is not a bad call either. He has certainly demonstrated in these last 6 months his willingness to listen and to actually kind of turn his boat into an understanding of the threat. That takes humility that many generals in his position wouldn't necessarily, do. I think for, one of the things, there's a gentleman named Charlie Price who I would strongly recommend as the next FBI director when they impeach Mr. Comey. And Charlie is a longtime investigator, retired from the FBI, literally one of a renowned investigator, and a man of incredible and impeccable integrity. And it's almost, he would be a guy that would be looked at as an underdog for that position because he's not a political hack. And I think right now what the FBI needs is a guy like that, a guy like Louis Free, but even with more tenacity. And Louis Free had a lot of tenacity to step in and clean house at the FBI, because he would fire most of the FBI leadership very quickly because he knows who the corrupt ones are and who the ones are that don't have a clue. You've got people leading divisions in the FBI that have never worked those cases. I mean, if you can imagine an FBI, or let me put it this way, an infantry division in the Army or Marine Corps being led by a guy who never actually served as commander, company commander, battalion. You get where I'm going with that.
I do.
There are other people out there, but I'll tell you, it's a small number. If there's a rule that I would, or an overarching theme I would give to your listeners, it would be if anyone is in the inside, like taking the former RNC chair or the sitting RNC chair, and consider him in a leadership position as Mr. Trump is inside, I think is detrimental. To have these guys on the inside, these are the people the American public just voted against. They didn't bring Mr. Trump in to bring in a bunch of rhinos in there. They want conservative, patriotic, constitutionally minded Americans.
Absolutely. At 20 seconds before we get into the break, John, what can our listeners do other than pray at this point? Is there anything that they can do to act upon the information that we're giving them?
Well, first they need to know it. I encourage them, please go to our website, Understand the Threat. Sign up for the newsletter. Join us on social media. Help us in any way you can. Those are on the website. Because these recommendations we put out, you should be pounding local people in your region, your county, and your state who supported Mr. Trump, and make sure they know we're not going to support him unless...
All right, I'm going to have to interrupt. John Guandola for Understanding the Threats. Thanks for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. We're going to pick up with Chris Gobetz, Understanding the Threat, in the next section, and we're going to go to a 14-point recommendation that they are making to the president in order to secure defense policy and a secure national defense. Stay with us. We will be right back after these announcements.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence, which establish the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. It's President Obama's last Veterans Day as Commander-in-Chief, saying at a ceremony in Arlington National Cemetery as we search for ways to come together after the election.
To reconnect with one another and with the principles that are more enduring than transitory politics. Some of our best examples are the men and women we salute on Veterans Day.
President-elect Trump tweeted, "Today we express our deepest gratitude to all those who've served in our armed forces. Four people, three of them children, are killed in a car hit by a tractor-trailer on I-95 in South Carolina."
The tractor-trailer struck the rear of the vehicle of the four tourists, and it went down into the right-hand side of the roadway into a little ravine.
That's Highway Patrol Sergeant Bob Bears. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom, shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom, shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYL.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Well, in my experience, the days after Election Day can be filled with mixed emotions. Happiness, or at least some sense of relief when the candidates you supported make it to the finish line with a win. And conversely, unhappiness, or at least disappointment, when someone you supported fails to achieve victory. I'm sure you're probably feeling some of that today. I know that I am. But for me, these are also the times to remind myself about where our trust should ultimately lie. And that is in our sovereign God who loves us and in whom we have our ultimate hope. Don't get me wrong here. After all, we at the Pennsylvania Family Institute believe it's vitally important to engage in voting and influencing the political process for the common good. I think the Bible's clear that we should be salt and light. But even so, as we work and pray to make a difference, our trust should remain in God. Just as a farmer patiently waits for God to bring the increase, all the while tending to his crops, so too we who engage in the field of citizenship.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you happen to be just tuning in, as many are in this, the way they do on the summer listening live at lunch hour and others later, we're talking today about the issue of national security. We're talking about the whole issue of the transition team effort that is going on inside the Trump administration now. A lot of folks don't understand how critical a time that a new administration is. The president, in this case, has 4,700 positions to be filled throughout all of the departments. This is really the bringing into place the foot soldiers, the generals, the leaders who are actually going to lead the agenda forward. But there happen to be wolves among the sheep. We've talked about that. There happen to be termites coming in with a lumber. In this case, it's not just a figurative thing. These are really wolves among the sheep that are enemies of America, the Constitution, and all that we know. And we're going to continue our discussion now today with Chris Gabbetz. He was on with us on the first half. He is the vice president of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. And he is the individual who did work as an intern within the Hamas Organization Council on American Islamic Affairs back in 2017. He worked within their office undercover. And that story of his actually can be found in a book called Muslim Mafia, available online at the UnderstandingTheThreat.com store. Chris, let me go to you here right now if we can, because during the campaign, we had, it would actually, it was you, and I'm not sure if it was you or John, who made a statement that really awakened a lot of our listeners. And that was this. You said after 9/11, President Bush then invited in to sit at the table and gave a seat at the table, jihadists. The difference between then and now is that during the administration, those who sat at the table as jihadists are now actually running the meeting. That was an astounding statement, and I know that it awakened a lot of our listeners. You understanding that threat to national security, you and understanding the threat, you and John and others, have come up with 14 policy recommendations that you have either given or will be giving to the new Trump administration if our national security is to be restored. I'd like to go and look at that now in this next few moments and ask you, if you could, to identify the first recommendation, which I'm assuming is first because it's the most important, that needs to be put into place as a matter of discussion in the Trump administration if our national security is to be restored. Could you tell us what that is and why?
Sure, Sam. So our number one recommendation is to designate the Muslim Brotherhood a foreign terrorist organization. Now, as I testified at U.S. Senate in front of Ted Cruz's hearing on Islamic terrorism and willful blindness of the Obama administration, the Muslim Brotherhood is no different and has the same goals as the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, all of these jihadi groups that we're fighting all over the world. The Muslim Brotherhood has the same agenda, which is to wage jihad until they establish a global Islamic State under Sharia. So the very first step that we need to do is to designate the Muslim Brotherhood a foreign terrorist organization and send a clear message all the way down the chain, from the top all the way down the bottom of the national security apparatus, that you are not to work with any Muslim Brotherhood groups as outreach partners. You are not to work with them on formulating policy. You are not to work with them on investigations. The days of the Muslim Brotherhood coming into the White House, the days of the Muslim Brotherhood coming into state houses, and the days of Muslim Brotherhood coming in to police departments to offer training are over when you do that. And that goes hand in hand with our second recommendation, which is to indict unindicted co-conspirators in the U.S. versus Holy Land Foundation trial. The Holy Land Foundation trial is the largest terrorism financing and Hamas trial in U.S. history. And through that trial, they identified groups that were either Muslim Brotherhood or Hamas, which is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Once you start indicting those groups, to include Council on American Islamic Relations, the group that I worked undercover at, to include the Islamic Society of North America, which President Obama has sent videos to them that they play on their conferences congratulating them, to where we've had Department of Homeland Security Advisory Council member Congressman Andre Carson and Congressman Keith Ellison speak at Muslim Brotherhood events, ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America. These groups need to be indicted. And there is, as I've testified, there's enough evidence right now to indict these groups. It's never been a lack of evidence. It's always been a lack of will. And in 2009, so they prosecuted the Holy Land Foundation. In 2009, they had a list of unindicted co-conspirators that they could have then gone in and indicted. Eric Holder shut that investigation down. Our hope and what really needs to happen is that the new Attorney General comes in and indicts all of those groups.
I think that's a very important thing that you're starting out with. And I would say, would it be true to say that when they are in that process, and as you're saying, the current law would, if enforced, condemn them? Is that what you're saying? They don't have to. Do we need a new law? Let's put it this way. Is a new law needed by Congress in order to identify the Muslim Brotherhood as an enemy entity, or is it just a matter of proper enforcement of current law?
Just a matter of proper enforcement of current law. the Attorney General on day one could indict these groups based off laws already on the books and based off the evidence we already have.
Wow. I mean, so, and really, I mean, so as we look at this, I mean, the same kind of thing you're saying then that failed to, for instance, indict a Hillary Clinton or failed to act on a number of things regarding the Clinton Foundation, as an example, those same things that failed to bring justice there are the same kinds of thinking that have failed to bring justice or enforcement of the law against known enemies already in place throughout the federal government, like the Muslim Brotherhood.
That's right. The Muslim Brotherhood, remember John was talking earlier about the kind of war that we're in, which is an information war. And what the Muslim Brotherhood did was convince people on both sides of the aisle that they are the moderates in this war, that they, the suit-wearing jihadis of the Muslim Brotherhood, are going to help us defeat Al-Qaeda, and they're going to help us defeat the Islamic State. The problem with that is again, their goal is no different, their objective is no different than Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. So we've been using jihadis to help us fight the war against jihadis, and that's why we're losing this war.
See, that's an amazing thing. So let's tie this back in now, if we can, Chris, to a comment that John made on before the break. You have these establishment Republicans. You mentioned Bob Corker. You mentioned a couple of these other guys as an example. These establishment Republicans who have either already evidenced themselves as either being ignorant of or participatory with, or however you want to look at it, but they clearly have not done what they should have done relative to this whole thing before. Do you believe that there is a sufficiently large number of establishment Republicans currently in the Senate or are currently going to be serving in the House that would be in position so as to oppose or stop a new attorney general or FBI director from doing the kinds of law enforcement you're talking about?
Well, I don't know if they would certainly oppose it. I do know that there's no excuse in the world for any establishment Republican to be at the leadership level, because the leadership level is going to be driving policies. And the same people, again, understanding the threat, we are not a political organization. We talk politics. We don't shy away from it when it affects national security. But we're a national security organization. So you have groups. The establishment Republicans have been infiltrated through political influence operations by the Muslim Brotherhood, just like the left has been. Now, has the left completely embraced their agenda? Absolutely. It's more fragmented on the establishment Republican side. But let me be perfectly clear. If establishment Republicans are at leadership-level positions, any of the policies that need to be implemented that are going to dismantle the jihadi network in America are going to be thwarted, because these establishment Republicans have been influenced heavily by the Muslim Brotherhood, because they've never taken the time to understand the threat. Like our whenever we brief legislators, whether it's on Capitol Hill or throughout the states in the U.S., or whether we brief law enforcement, we always say, look, we can disagree about the strategy for how to dismantle the jihadi network, but you have to understand the threat first before you can even sit at the table to discuss strategy. The problem is we've got people, particularly establishment Republicans, the discussion we're talking about, that have never taken the time to study the enemy, to know the enemy, and yet they want senior positions to and sit at the table to create strategies and policies that'll dismantle the network. It'll never work.
Well, see, I think, Chris, you're making a great point there. And I encourage our listeners right now, as you are listening to this, when Chris says that we have people who are actually sitting congressmen, sitting senators, who are participatory with or at least soft on the very enemy of America, Muslim Brotherhood, jihadi Islam in and throughout our government. And what Chris, you just said was many of them, because they simply haven't taken the time to understand, are actually a problem today. So ladies and gentlemen, this program is all about trying to bring forward information. Hopefully it will encourage you to go and study out more. Go to understandingthethreat.com website on this particular area. Get yourself up to speed more clearly. Think very, very important. Now stay with us if you can. We're going to come back out in the last segment, and we're going to look at what's happening in these mass riots now, these rent-a-mob organizations that are taking place across the country. We're going to ask Chris, who are they, where are they going, and who's funding them?
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Live, love, learn, and leave a legacy. These are great words, but if you want to leave a legacy to your children and grandchildren these days, it's going to take some careful planning. And that's where we come in. We're the Life Financial Group, advisors you can trust. We're Christian, families based upon the Bible, so that we can say we truly understand your values. In fact, for nearly 40 years, folks of all ages have counted on us to care for and grow their financial resources. Through prayer, prudent investment, and pleasant, knowledgeable people, we can help you navigate your investments so you feel secure. We're glad to offer morally clean investment options that won't sear your conscience or make you anxious. We're also comfortable talking about increasing the impact of your charitable giving. How do we make a difference? So learn how you can have peace of mind by calling us today at 610-385-4500. That's 610-385-4500. Or online at thelifegroup.org. That's thelifegroup.org.
Securities and advisory services offered through Genius Wealth Management, member FINRA and SIPC.
Up next, Dr. Carol Swain with 2 minutes to think about it. From high school dropout and teenage mother to esteemed Vanderbilt University political science and law professor, Carol examines the religious significance of today's most pressing issues and courageously exposes the cultural forces that threaten our cherished values and principles.
Hello, folks. A revolution took place this week. We have elected a new president who will take the oath of office in 2017 and will be positioned to set in motion necessary changes to restore the rule of law and constitutional government in America. For Christians, the election of Donald J. Trump has the possibility of enabling us to reclaim some lost ground when it comes to our freedom of religion and freedom of speech. It's a historic election in that, for the first time since 1928, the American electorate has entrusted a Republican presidential candidate with unified governance in the form of a Republican House and a Senate majority who have the mandate and potential to help the president achieve his policy goals. We the people have spoken and used our constitutional and God-given wisdom to bring about needed change in the Washington establishment and the world at large. What happens next is up to the people who have elected a new government to carry out the policy mandates for America. For millions of us, Mr. Trump's victory was an endorsement of the Republican Party's pro-family, pro-life, and pro-American agenda. It's an answer to prayers from around the world for positive change. We can only hope that God will bless America if we continue to be faithful to do the things He has called us to do. Now we should celebrate and praise the Lord for what seems now as a national reprieve.
Learn more about Dr. Carol Swain at BeThePeopleTV.com, CarolMSwain.net, and on Facebook at Professor Carol M. Swain, Ph.D.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
As we wind up the program today, we've been talking really about the transitionary issue of the what's happening in the Trump administration, why it's so critical that they pay attention to who they are putting in positions of authority, and identified by John Gondola and Chris Gobbets, who's with us right now. They've made it very, very clear that the greatest threat is the intertwining or the putting in positions individuals who are pro-jihadi Islamists, Muslim Brotherhood individuals, which are throughout our federal government right now. And they are wanting to get themselves back into key positions of authority. Now, that is something we need to pray about, ladies and gentlemen. And I want to now move on, though, as we close this and talking about the whole issue of what's happening across the country with these citywide riots and demonstrations and burning of American flag and destruction of property seem to be increasing. And it seems a little odd to me. Most of these people are in their 20s, it seems like. They're screaming death to Trump and worse. Don't know how they can be spontaneous. I'm glad to see that the president-elect, Trump, have come out this morning and said, make it clear, ladies and gentlemen, Americans, he said, these are not Americans. They are not operating on behalf of what we love in America. And he's identified them as not a spontaneous group, but as an organized group somehow. So with that being said, I'm going to go to you now, Chris Gobetz, who is with UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Who is behind these riots? And I'm going to throw this into it also. Is there a Muslim Brotherhood connection perhaps in these? Let's set this up. Who and what's happening with these riots happening out there?
So what we're seeing across the country with these riots is what we call the Red-Green Axis. The Red Marxist Socialist Movement, funded primarily by George Soros groups in the U.S., and then the Green Axis, the Jihadi Axis, which is being driven by Muslim Brotherhood groups. So you have Soros Marxist Socialist groups, and you have Jihadi groups like the Muslim Brotherhood behind these riots in the U.S. Now, for your listeners, a lot of times people would question, what brings these two groups together to work together? And it is simply this. From a Marxist socialist perspective, you need to create social upheaval per the Saul Alinsky Rules for Radicals, how to foment a revolution. You need to create social upheaval to tear the system down. From a jihadi perspective, their goal is an Islamic State, no different than the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State over in Iraq. In Syria, they have the same goal, or they have the same need, which is to tear down the system to establish their Islamic State. So they will work together to do their main goal, which is to tear the system down. The rebuilding phase, the jihadis feel like they're going to create an Islamic State out of that social upheaval and revolution. The socialist Marxists feel like they're going to create their Marxist utopia out of that revolution. But they will work together in the meantime, and we've even seen them at their own conferences, Muslim Brotherhood conferences, talk about working with these socialist Marxist groups like Black Lives Matter to create a revolution in the United States.
Well, see, that's interesting because that's how we've connected, and we started in this program saying there are the Islamists, there are the globalists, and there are the establishment, really all together wrapped up, and you've connected two of them clearly. Now let me go. You've already answered a part of it, their goal. There are some out there, and some things actually, there's a number of articles now floating around. And I, having read even some of George Soros' own stuff, the material, it would indicate that they are actually pushing for a revolution. I see happening in Egypt right now that there are out there, there's some revolution efforts going underway in Egypt, cropping up. Are we witnessing something perhaps that is perhaps even larger than the United States with this group that is really intent on, world domination?
Well, yeah, it goes back to the goals of both of these groups. Look, the Marxist socialist movement is not just in the United States. This is a global movement. And similarly with the jihadi movement, this is a global movement. And so their goals, yeah, we're looking at it from a U.S. perspective because we're a U.S. national security team, but we have to look at the global picture as well to truly understand this. And to the conversation that we had earlier, just to get your listeners thinking about this a little bit more, remember this, from a jihadi perspective, the left-wing socialist Marxist policies or governance is just as evil as capitalist or free market or a republic. They're all man-made laws. The only law from a jihadi perspective that they support is Sharia law. So when we talk about the jihadis will work with anybody, whether it's the left or the right, to achieve their goals, but it's always to achieve their goals. It's never to condone the left or the right's policies. They will. That's why we're so worried about this transition team right now, is because they will immediately, the Muslim Brotherhood groups will immediately switch gears and be more than happy to call themselves conservatives and work within those the Trump team and the Trump camp in order to fulfill their goals. They have no problem switching allegiance because from their perspective, they're all evil.
Interesting. That's a great point that you're making. Chris, what should we be expecting? Do you believe that what we're seeing with these rent-a-mob efforts and these demonstrations, you know, we had them during the summer. We had, you know, Ferguson and Baltimore and Charlotte. They kind of came up. They kind of went down. I thought maybe they would continue and build to a climax, but they seemed not to. Now we're seeing them resurrect themselves right now, with the election being the quote-unquote reason for their efforts. Is there any reason to suspect that this will be short-lived, or do you think they're going to try and build this effort, perhaps trying to even impact the inauguration coming up here in January?
Oh, without a doubt, the inauguration, there will be an impact. But understand this, they will use this tactic of violence in the streets as a tactic. It is not the end game. So it will be strategically used whenever President Obama does something. For instance, the team, Obama's team, goes out and indicts all the Muslim Brotherhood organizations listed in Holy Land Foundation trial and designates the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. That would be a time where you could start seeing solidarity between the left and the Muslim Brotherhood groups hitting the streets and causing chaos and bringing attention to this issue. They will use any issue that goes against their furtherance as an excuse to hit the streets and tear down cities. And so it will be used strategically. I don't see this as a nonstop movement. It will be, they will pick their spots from time to time whenever the right time is to use violence in the streets.
Chris, we've been closing this program in prayer. I'm going to close ours right now because we're getting close to the end. Thank you for what you have just said. And we need, American people need to be alert and be praying fervently between now and through this whole entire time. Ladies and gentlemen, let me go to prayer here before us right now. Heavenly Father, we are thankful to you for what you delivered in this election. We thank you for this new team that is in place. We would pray for wisdom and discernment for the transitionary team. Give them alertness to who they are putting and in what positions. May the enemy of freedom and Christianity and the Constitution be identified in the process. We would pray, Lord, that justice would be done, that those who are seeking to destroy and create these demonstrations and all, Lord, that you would have the powers to be, justice to be executed against them, and that this would be stopped. We pray that God's people would be fervent, more fervent than ever, and our prayer in these days ahead. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us today on Standing the Gap Today. Chris Gavitz from UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Thank you and John for being with us. God bless you and what you are doing. Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend's before us. We hope that as you go forth, you take this information, act upon it, and stay on your knees in prayer for our nation. That's what is needed. Standing the Gap for Truth, where you are this weekend.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Live from beautiful West Norriton Township, this is AM